Since I first announced that I would be outlining proposals for a broad range of reforms to the media industry in Australia, there's been, I think you'll have all agreed, a steady commentary, and I don't want for lack of advice in the media, and indeed much speculation about the shape and direction of the government's options for media reform. I have spent a great deal of time listening to the views of a wide range of stakeholders in the process, and I make no apologies for doing this, to suggest that the views of the media industry in Australia are not legitimate when we are contemplating far-reaching and comprehensive reforms is simply not justified. But I also recognise that the views of a broader range of stakeholders, including the Australian community, are equally important. In the end, it's all about providing a richer and more diverse media environment for Australian consumers, and that is why their views are important. That's why today I am releasing a discussion paper outlining options for a strategic framework for proposed reforms to the media industry in Australia. These reform options marry the government's long-standing policy of changes to cross-media laws in Australia and relaxation of the foreign ownership restrictions with reforms to ensure Australia will not be left behind as the world converts to digital. This process has not been one of conforming to any particular media player's view of the world. Instead, it's been one of balancing the need for diversity and new and innovative services for Australian consumers now with the need to equip Australia for the digital future. There is a compelling case, I believe, for change, and if the government doesn't act, then there's a genuine risk that Australians will become a dinosaur trapped in the analogue age. Traditional media services are being challenged, as Ian has said, by new digital technologies, and this is resulting in the emergence of new players and new content, new services and indeed new platforms. For the consumer, this means an ever-increasing number of new sources of information and entertainment. For the media sector, while this evolution poses challenges as audiences are attracted away from traditional media sources, it also presents significant opportunities to embrace new ways of doing business. For the government, the impact of digital technologies means the current regulatory settings, which are largely designed for an analogue world, risk becoming outdated. To date, media policy has traditionally closely controlled who may enter the market and what services they may offer. The regulated settings for what I'm calling, for the purposes of today, old media, by that I mean commercial TV, broadcasting, print and radio, the regulated platforms, assume a settled and steady media landscape. But the global conversion to digital means we can no longer rely on traditional structures to deliver consumers the services they need and demand. In a converged environment, the lines are blurring. The traditionally distinct telecommunications, broadcasting, print and IT sectors are delivering an increasingly common range of services. And as we move towards a digital world, it will become increasingly difficult to regulate the emergence of new players and new services. The shift to digital has substantially impacted not only upon entertainment services, but also on sources of news, public opinion and information. For instance, use of internet-based news media has been growing rapidly. In fact, news is now available from hundreds of unmediated sources in addition to the news available on the regulated platforms. While many popular news sites are provided by traditional media companies, that is true, the emergence of web blogging, news via mobile phones and independent online news services and news wires means that news and current affairs reporting has become much more interactive. All of these developments mean we must consider models which move away from controlling the market structures and consider a new regulatory framework that embraces rather than resists digital trends. a model that allows for some efficiencies of scale and scope for existing industry players, whilst encouraging new entrants, new investment and new services to contribute to diversity in a global competitive environment. It is long-standing government policy to reform Australia's media ownership laws. However, the convergence of technologies means these reforms can no longer, in my view, be considered in isolation from the looming digital challenge. As I've said, Australia will be left behind if we don't release the media industry from their current lockstep, allow some efficiencies, encourage new services, and yet protect localism and diversity with robust consumer safeguards. The digital television policy settings put in place in 1998 and 2000 were envisaged as transitional arrangements. So there are a number of legislated changes that will come down the pipeline from the 1st of January 2007, whether we are ready or not. First, the moratorium on allocating new commercial television broadcasting licences expires. From this date, if changes are not made to the current legislative arrangements, the regulator, ACMA, will have the capacity to allocate new free-to-air commercial TV licences on the broadcasting services band. Secondly, the moratorium will also end on the allocation of new free-to-air television services delivered over other platforms, such as wireless and satellite and cable broadband networks. Thirdly, in keeping with the government's desire to ensure that new services become available, from the 1st of January next year, the restrictions on data casting will be substantially lifted, and new data casting transmitter licences could be used to provide a wider range of services such as pay TV, niche or narrow casting free-to-air channels, and DVB-H services, that is TV over a mobile device, over currently reserved spectrum. Fourthly, the existing free-to-air television licensees are currently prohibited from acquiring a data casting transmitter licence, and unless some steps are taken, that prohibition would remain. However, and this is very important, these automatic changes to the regulatory framework do not affect existing cross-media and foreign ownership restrictions, restrictions on multi-channelling, the anti-siphoning regime, high-definition television quotas, or the December 2008 date for analogue switchover. This changing landscape means it's timely for the government to review its approach to media regulation overall and provides an opportunity to develop a strategic framework for media reform in Australia that truly brings us into the digital era. The challenges and opportunities of digital for the broadcasting sector, the plethora of new services emerging over unregulated platforms, the pervasive nature of the internet, and the need to free the media industry from the shackles of an old media-style regulatory framework are all interrelated. Analogue switch-off provides a natural start date for a range of reforms. It's only when we can reach analogue switch-off that the necessary spectrum will become available in congested markets for the full range of new digital services. However, there is scope for new services for Australian consumers now. We can encourage innovation and investment now as the forerunner to the complete digital experience at switchover. We also have the opportunity to provide new services to balance any consolidations following the implementation of the government's long-standing policy to remove or relax cross-media and foreign ownership restrictions. A fundamental plank in achieving a digitally capable nation is turning off the analogue TV signal. While the transition to digital started in 2001, by relying mainly on market forces to drive take-up of free-to-air digital television, we've clearly not progressed at a level or pace to allow the switchover to commence at the end of 2008 as originally planned. Developments in Australia and across the world now compel us to expedite a switchover plan. Other countries are moving rapidly to analogue switchover, and the period 2010 to 2012 is increasingly being identified as a common switchover target internationally. Australia must now implement a strategy to energetically drive take-up to achieve switchover. Already, according to industry information, by the 31st of December 2005, suppliers had sold 1,304,000 free-to-air digital television receivers to retailers. While take-up appears to be sluggish, around 15.5%, there are some positives. When you add in digital pay TV take-up, that figure jumps to around 27.5%. More than 95% of the population now has access to at least one free-to-air broadcaster service in digital mode, with more than 85% of the population having access to all broadcasters in their area in digital mode. While I've often said that the current legislated date for switchover of 2008 is, in my view, unachievable, I do not believe there is a need to push this date back as far as 2015, a date suggested as recently as last week in one of those helpful commentaries. The obvious consumer benefits of digital aside, there is a clear cost benefit to broadcasters and taxpayers in reaching switchover sooner rather than later. The government already spends around $75 million annually, contributing to the simulcasting costs of the national broadcasters and supporting the digital rollout for commercial operators in regional Australia. Preparation and management of analogue switchover will be a challenging and a substantial task that will involve careful planning and coordination of the efforts of government, ACMA, broadcasters, manufacturers, retailers, consumers and others. The government therefore proposes to release a digital action plan this year to provide a roadmap to switchover with measures to drive digital take-up, incentives for broadcasters and manufacturers to strive for switchover, and measures to assist consumers make the switch. We'll also look at forming a dedicated new organisation, something like SwitchCo in the United Kingdom, to oversee and coordinate the activities necessary to achieve analogue switchover. The Digital Action Plan would also recognise the different requirements for achieving analogue switchover in metropolitan and regional areas nationally. At this stage, it is proposed that the plan would aim for an analogue switchover period commencing in 2010 to 2012, consistent with the targets set in many other industrialised nations. To complement this energetic plan to drive digital take-up in Australia, we need to look at removing impediments to new digital-only services emerging. New content, as well as the benefits of a clearer picture, are two of the biggest recognised drivers of take-up. During the transition to digital, there's an opportunity to allocate some available spectrum now for new digital-only services on two currently unallocated digital channels in the broadcasting services band that could be put to a variety of uses. One use could be a fourth free-to-air commercial television service. I've said on many occasions I don't see a compelling case for a fourth free-to-air commercial station at this stage. The media sector is changing rapidly and many opportunities for new and different services are emerging that could be better deployed on the only remaining spectrum until switch-off in congested markets. In my view, the current arrangements with three free-to-air commercial TV broadcasters are working well in delivering quality services to Australian viewers. Therefore, the government does not propose to allocate a new commercial TV licence at the end of the current moratorium, and we do not envisage allocating any new licences before analogue switchover. However, the government is not proposing to continue to restrict the availability of new terrestrially delivered commercial television licences indefinitely. The government proposes to review the scope for new free-to-air commercial television broadcasting licences within the broadcasting services band at a time closer to the end of the digital analogue simulcast period. In the meantime, consistent with our election commitment, the government will amend legislation to ensure that the decision about whether to allocate new terrestrially delivered commercial television licences, both within and outside the broadcasting services band, will be a matter for the government of the day rather than the regulator. Another option for the use of the unallocated spectrum is for other new digital broadcasting and related services. After a lacklustre response to the datacasting spectrum in 2001, the spectrum has mainly been used for trials of new digital services, including television over a mobile device and datacasting services. The government now has a strong interest in deploying this spectrum to provide significant opportunities for new innovative digital service options of interest and value to consumers, and to provide the opportunity for new entrants into the market. The attractiveness of this spectrum should increase when the limits on what can be shown by the holder of a data casting licence automatically expire on the 1st of January. Trials of data casting services are currently underway in Sydney, providing some indication of how this might develop. A range of material, including traffic and weather reports, text-based news, government information such as employment opportunities and tenders, public health information, financial information, shopping channels, and my very favourite, parliamentary audio channels. The government recognises that one of the challenges in the design of these new services will likely be the adaptation of suitable content. International mobile TV trials suggest that consumers may prefer, for example, short clips, sometimes referred to as snack content, such as news headlines, sports highlights, music videos, entertainment and information that can be accessed when convenient to the user waiting for the bus or on the train or whatever. With new and improved compression technologies being rolled out around the world, just one of the 7 megahertz channels could feasibly provide up to 30 channels of content. However, the data casting spectrum would not be a de facto way of providing a lookalike traditional TV station, but rather should offer something new to Australian consumers, something they can't already get. Therefore, the framework favours designing the use of this spectrum to help increase diversity in the Australian market. ACMA has already been asked to start planning for the allocation of the data casting spectrum, should the government choose to go down this path. How the spectrum would be allocated and the precise guidelines for its use will obviously be developed as part of this process. New platforms outside the broadcasting services band also offer opportunities for both existing and emerging players to offer new and innovative digital services over wireless and satellite and broadband networks. By not extending the moratorium on new commercial TV licences, these services could emerge from the 1st of January 2007, subject to obtaining the appropriate licences. New services on these platforms would of course face significant challenges in terms of start-up costs, receivers and equipment, and establishing a sustainable audience base. Therefore, a more flexible approach to regulating these services is justified. The government is therefore not inclined to impose unnecessary restrictions on these new platforms in order to encourage new and innovative services for Australian consumers. It's proposed that the specific media and ownership control provisions that apply to these services would be relaxed at the same time as services that operate within the broadcasting services band. It is proposed that the government of the day would be responsible for allocation of these licences and, following the end of the moratorium on new licences at the end of the year, could allocate them if it were in the public interest. It's also proposed to exempt these services from the licence area ownership limits and the 75% audience reach restrictions. Obviously, if you had a national satellite service, it would be very difficult to restrict it to 75%. However, these services would remain subject to the general competition law and foreign investment restrictions. Therefore, both current and new players could potentially take advantage of a range of new opportunities to participate outside the traditional broadcasting environment. For instance, broadcasters are gatekeepers of a substantial quantity of valuable programming and are already showing interest in different ways of packaging this content for delivery over digital platforms. Channel 7, for example, recently partnered with Yahoo to form Yahoo 7 Internet Portal. Channel 9 has done this with Microsoft to create 9MSN. FTA and subscription networks have shown interest in providing content for mobile TV trials, the ones I've mentioned currently being conducted in Sydney, and there may well be more services in which broadcasters are interested in participating. Clearly, following analogue switchover, additional spectrum will become available in the broadcasting services band that will provide further opportunities for new services to emerge. During the transition, there are some practical limitations on how much is possible. During my informal consultations on the challenges and opportunities of the digital age, a range of views from commercial broadcasters, from pay TV operators and other stakeholders were expressed about a mandated requirement for high-definition TV, HDTV, and multi-channelling. Currently, multi-channelling by the free-to-air broadcasters is prohibited until analogue switchover. That's what the legislation provides. However, both national broadcasters, the ABC and SBS, have successfully launched multi-channels under exemptions subject to genre restrictions. As part of my earlier conversations with some of the stakeholders, a group of industry engineers and representatives from ACMA drilled down into some of the more technical issues relating to compression technologies and the capacity to broadcast in high-definition TV as well as providing high-quality multi-channels at the same time. Their advice to me was that using existing compression technology, there is a legitimate technical obstacle to broadcasters being able to transmit in the highest quality high-definition TV while transmitting high-quality multi-channels at the same time. Recently at Senate Estimates, the Director of Technology and Distribution at SBS also acknowledged that there would be significant quality issues with their existing multi-channel if the station were to use the highest quality high-definition TV. The quotas were introduced to provide some assurance to consumers, that is the high-definition TV quotas, manufacturers and production companies, that high-definition television material would be available in Australia following its introduction. In my view, the rationale for the quota remains. However, like the rationale for restricting multi-channelling, which was to ensure during the transition to digital viewers of analogue and digital, that they had access to substantially the same programming, it's much less compelling once Australia has reached switchover. The approach I am suggesting then recognises that while multi-channelling restrictions have provided a period of stability during the transition to digital, the end of the simulcast period provides a natural end point for these restrictions, a position which is already reflected in legislation. Therefore, the government proposes that both the high-definition TV quotas and restrictions will be lifted at switchover. In a fully digital broadcasting environment, there will no longer be a rationale for continuing these restrictions. In the interim, however, to help drive both digital and high-definition take-up, broadcasters could be permitted to show high-definition programming on a digital-only multi-channel one without a requirement for it also to be simulcast in standard definition. This gives those broadcasters who wish to and who choose to an opportunity to provide new digital-only services to consumers in the lead-up to switchover when full multi-channelling will be permitted but not required. The government also proposes to allow regional broadcasters some concessions to enable them to provide one high-definition TV feed across their licence area rather than multiple local program breakouts. This will reduce the cost and complexity of complying with the high-definition TV quota requirement for these regional broadcasters. The government would, however, be prepared to reconsider this proposed approach to both high-definition TV and multi-channelling should, for example, any changes in the lead-up to analogue switchover help overcome some of the technical difficulties currently associated with providing high-quality HDTV and also providing multi-channels at the same time. Both national broadcasters in Australia have expressed a strong desire to enhance their multi-channelling capability and continue to innovate and help drive digital take-up. This, I think, is a legitimate role for the national broadcasters and entirely consistent with their charter obligations. Currently, the genre restrictions that apply to the national broadcasters' multi-channels present a practical limitation of their ability to develop new services that could attract a wide audience for digital TV. For example, the national broadcasters are allowed to provide educational, science, religious, health programs and children's programs on new digital channels, but not programs such as national news broadcasts, drama, movies and most sports broadcasts. It is proposed, therefore, to remove the current legislative restrictions and allow full multi-channelling by the national broadcasters as soon as possible, subject to restrictions on the screening of anti-siphoning sport. This will provide the national broadcasters with an opportunity to provide attractive new digital content and to experiment with digital program production and new digital services such as interactivity. It would also be consistent with their public service role and enable them to make further use of valuable archival material. Which brings me to anti-siphoning. With both the introduction of pay TV and the move to digital TV, the anti-siphoning list continues to play a role in ensuring that important national sporting events are shown on free-to-air television. However, while I consider the rationale for the list remains, I'm of the view that there is scope for further scrutiny of the anti-siphoning list and the number of events on it. There are currently a number of events on the list that are protected in their entirety, despite not all the events in the competition being broadcast. This is particularly the case with tournaments which comprise multiple rounds, such as tennis and golf. While digital take-up is still relatively low, the migration of events on the anti-siphoning list to multi-channels would be inconsistent with the objectives of the anti-siphoning scheme to provide the widest access for viewers to listed events. It would also have an adverse impact on pay TV's capacity to provide sports programming. The government proposes that free-to-air broadcasters would be prohibited from broadcasting sports events on the anti-siphoning list on any digital multi-channels unless the content has already been shown or is shown simultaneously on their main channel. The restriction would initially apply only to the national broadcasters on the basis of the proposal that they be permitted to provide full multi-channelling services during the simulcast period. In the event commercial broadcasters are permitted to multi-channel prior to analogue switchover, this restriction would also apply to them. It is also proposed that commencing on the 1st of January 2007, a use it or lose it scheme would be introduced for events on the anti-siphoning list based on the results of ACMA's first year of monitoring events. The scheme would identify criteria against which use of an event by a free-to-air broadcaster could be measured, and if the event is not used, it may be removed from the anti-siphoning list. Ministerial discretion, however, would be retained in respect of any decision to remove events from the anti-siphoning list. The government proposes to review the ongoing rationale for the anti-siphoning scheme prior to the expiry of the current list on the 31st of December 2010 and before the end of the simulcast period. This review would also consider the restriction on the national and commercial broadcasters' multi-channelling sport on the anti-siphoning list. Clearly, the time for action to meet the challenges of digital is now, and when I first started to look at how to move Australia into the digital age, it became increasingly apparent that any moves to reform the media sector needed to be seen in conjunction with the impact of new media and analogue switchover. The current cross-media laws increasingly risk inhibiting the growth of new services, limiting media companies from obtaining economies of scale and scope, constraining them in addressing the kind of challenges I've talked about posed by emerging media forms, and foreclosing future developments in the marketplace. As a result, investment and innovation in Australian media is curtailed. Cross-media restrictions and foreign ownership restrictions deal, of course, as I've said, with the regulated platforms of print, analogue TV and radio. The purpose of the proposed framework I'm outlining today is to provide the opportunity for new entrants and diversity and new services, as well as allowing some movement by existing media players. A combination of reforms that would both enable new services and new players to emerge and allow existing media providers to respond more flexibly to the dynamic digital marketplace offer, I think, the potential for improved services and choice to media consumers. However, as I said at the beginning of these remarks, there must be safeguards to ensure that there is no undue concentration of ownership of Australia's media outlets. Therefore, it is proposed that cross-media transactions would be allowed, subject to the remaining a minimum number of commercial media groups in the relevant market, 4 in regional markets and 5 in mainland state capitals. It's important to remember that in addition to commercial media services, consumers will continue to have access to the 2 national broadcasters, community television and radio broadcasters, subscription TV, a proliferation of news, information and entertainment on the net, and out-of-area newspapers such as national newspapers. Existing specific limits on audience reach and the number of licences that can be controlled by 1 person, 1 television and 2 radio in 1 market would be retained for regulated platforms, and cross-media entities would be required to disclose their relationship when reporting on another entity within that group. The government also proposes that the foreign ownership restrictions specifically relating to media will be lifted. The foreign ownership safeguards provided by the media sector's status as a sensitive sector should be sufficient to ensure that any investment that's contrary to Australia's national interest is prevented. ACMA would continue to oversee the diversity test, and the competition rules would continue to apply, administered by the ACCC. In addition, the government has separately proposed improving ACMA's powers to give it a more appropriate gradation of penalties and powers. This will assist the regulator's ability to monitor and respond to any issue that may arise as part of broader media reforms. Live and local media remains incredibly important to the people of rural and regional Australia. The government is committed to ensuring that Australians in regional markets will continue to have access to locally relevant news and information programming, regardless of any ownership changes that might take place between the media outlets in their market. Licence conditions are currently imposed on television broadcasters in aggregated regional commercial TV markets in regional Queensland, northern New South Wales, southern New South Wales, and regional Victoria, which require minimum levels of content to be broadcast on matters of local significance. In recognition of the importance of local content to regional communities, the government proposes to legislate to require the retention of these licence conditions and to extend this requirement to the aggregated market of Tasmania. ACMA and the government will continue to monitor the provision of local content in other regional television licence areas and on regional commercial radio services. And the government may consider extending licence conditions relating to levels of local content in those markets if local content declines materially. Due to the high costs and smaller audience numbers, most regional markets already have 4 or fewer media groups, and therefore the scope for any mergers of the kind I've outlined under cross-media and foreign ownership changes would be limited. Regional incumbents already enjoy a high level of protection, with entry to commercial radio and television broadcasting strictly limited by moratoriums and the planning decisions of the broadcasting regulator, and therefore changes in most markets could only occur if a new player was introduced. The new media environment will likely provide a richer and more diverse media entertainment experience for consumers across Australia. It's not about taking away any of the current services, it's about providing the opportunity for more. As changes scheduled to occur to the digital regime give rise to opportunities for new services, there are two possibilities for the timing of the introduction of any reforms to the relaxation of cross-media and foreign restrictions, and I've posed two timeframes. Either 2007, when the introduction of new digital services is possible, or alternatively, an analogue switchover. Both options would enable media transactions to occur together with opportunities for new digital services and new players to emerge. So obviously there's a lot more detail to these proposals, but I do encourage those of you who have a deep interest in these matters to read the discussion paper, and submissions can be made until the 18th of April. I will consider carefully all new ideas and carefully consider criticisms of the ones I've outlined and whether any refinements to the framework needs to be made before government makes a final decision on the way forward. I've endeavoured in setting this framework out for discussion to set out options to develop a strategic plan for media reform, one that recognises what can be done now and what is required going forward to achieve a new media landscape for Australians. The disproportionately high level of interest in any proposed media reforms, I think, are indicative of how highly the current services are valued. Some would say it's just that others aren't interested, but I think that there are a lot of people very interested in what are, after all, some of our most important democratic freedoms that we have in this country. We should not shy away, however, from moving forward, from meeting the digital challenge, from allowing proprietors an opportunity to make new investments. If we are too timid, ladies and gentlemen, ultimately it will be Australian consumers who will miss out on the benefits that others will simply take for granted. Thank you very much.